you for joining us for live paranormal radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show hosts and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on the Live Paranormal Radio Network. Please find us at liveparanormal.com and all of our affiliates, which includes iHeartRadio.com, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Podomatic, Player FM, Blog Talk Radio. There are more that I'm not mentioning. Go and find us at all of those places. So thrilled to be a part of Live Paranormal's family, the iHeartRadio family, and just all the families, all the things. I'm your host, Sheena Metal. I'm a psychic medium. I'm an interfaith minister. I'm a 28-year talk radio host here in LA. I'm a performing artist, and this is Raising the Vibration, the first outreach of a nonprofit movement, RaisingTheVibration.org, that I founded in 2016 after my mom's passing to really raise the peace and love and kindness and unity on the earth as was her wish. This radio show is all of those things, but it's also about ascension, evolvement, inspiration, and love. So what are you doing to raise your own vibration? How is that leading to your overall evolvement? And then how are you taking both of those things, using it to inspire others, and how much love are you throwing into the world? This show combines people I love and respect from my entertainment life, from my spiritual life, from my world of give back life, and we talk about passion and service, and most importantly, what are you doing to make the world a better place? And are you asking yourself that on a regular basis? How are you growing, evolving, and what are you doing to make the world a better place? My guest today is an event photographer, former karaoke cult leader, an entrepreneur, and a host of a wonderful show that I was thrilled to be a guest on last week, A Funny Way of Looking. Please welcome to the show my new best friend, the wonderful Michael Jackson is here. Michael, it's so wonderful to have you here. I'm so honored to have you on the show, and I think you are absolutely fantastic. Welcome.
I am absolutely thrilled to be here. I am sitting in my chair straight up just laughing and giggling that I get to talk with you.
Well, I'm so glad you're here. That's great. I was just thinking today, we're going to take a total left turn and talk about karaoke.
Oh, my God, yes.
I was a musical theater major. I fronted a band for 20 years. I'm deathly terrified to sing karaoke. I was in choirs, but I just feel like why would I get up in front of people and sing if there's no real reason?
It's an amazing experience to get up in front of people and do karaoke.
Yeah, I've decided that this has been kind of a next phase spiritual awakening year for me. And so one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to get a karaoke machine, and I'm going to practice singing songs and get my voice back in shape, because my voice has not been great since I had COVID, and just go out and sing some karaoke and make it my new hobby. How about that? And here you are, a former karaoke cult leader.
Do you know what's so interesting? When I started doing karaoke, I was in Chicago, right? And I didn't do karaoke. I was, like, terrified to get up and sing. And the funny thing is, you know, I kind of sang. Like, you know, I sing in the church youth groups and stuff like that. But
yeah.
Never, ever, ever did a solo, right? So I would go with my friend Todd. We'd all go out with all our friends. And everybody else would go sing karaoke. And we knew that by the time we got back from playing pool, they would all be, you know, kind of drunk and wouldn't be forcing us to get up on stage and actually do anything. So the only way I got into karaoke was because one day the karaoke host was sick and didn't show up, and they knew that I didn't sing. So they said, Michael, can you just get up there and start doing the karaoke and, like, calling people up? And I'm like, never done it, but, yep, let's do it. So I got up there on stage, and, you know, it, one thing led to another. So that weekend they said, hey, can you come do a weekend show? We've got people that want to do karaoke but no host. And I'm like, sure. So that led, one thing led to another. And literally I was out one day at a big bar in Chicago, and I was looking at their stage. It was completely empty. And I said, you know what? We could do karaoke here. And by this time, I actually had my own equipment and my own disc at the time. And I went and said, hey, can we do some karaoke here? And they said, okay, we can try it. We're not doing anything else on blah, blah, blah night, whatever night it was I was doing. And so we got up there, and literally within, I don't know, a couple months, I had hundreds of people that were following me around doing karaoke. And I ended up with a couple thousand people that just followed me around doing karaoke.
Isn't that wonderful? And it's such a nice relief for people. It's so fun.
It is. And, you know, the thing about the karaoke cult, and you can still find videos of it, because I did like a couple of TV like episodes for it and stuff like that. But the fun thing about it was, and this is you mentioned in the preamble to the show and everything that you want to help people do stuff, right? And I have to say, one of my goals in life really is to help people. I remember before I got up there, I was terrified to get up and actually do karaoke for people, right? And I didn't want to sing. I thought people were listening, and it's like, yeah, nobody was listening. But my goal with the karaoke cult was twofold. One, for people to have fun, right? And two, to take the people who were too shy to get up and get people rocking and rolling with them. So I had two things that I would do. Every time someone came into the bar or into the club, wherever we were, I would turn to the door and say, everybody say hello. And everyone would turn around, hey, how's it going? And they'd have to welcome people into the bar. So right away, you're like loving it, right? And the second thing was, it didn't matter how bad the person was singing, I made sure that somebody stood up and gave them a rock star welcome and said, it was like, you might as well have been Bon Jovi on stage, right? And everyone was like yelling and screaming. So that was my whole goal, is like get everyone feeling good about karaoke. It's not singing about the singing, it's all about the love. That was the slogan for the show.
I love that, because it brings people together, right? And we need stuff like that. I worked many years. I worked talk radio on what was then the Howard Stern LA affiliate, and I shock jocked, right? So it was all, I see it on my wife because she gained 5 pounds, or my sister doesn't know I'm gay. It was all like tabloid TV kind of stuff. And my job was to listen to someone's story, make a joke about whatever they said, hang up on them, and go to the next one. And after year after year after year of that, I realized that it made me very jaded about people. And in my early 20s, while trying to get my career off the ground, I had booked live music. That was my job. So I started booking a little place around the corner. These guys had bought a place, and it was really walking distance from my house, this little tiny pub. And I started booking some shows. And I realized what it was like, how people responded to the music, how they loved the drinks, they loved the pool table and the dartboard. And I thought, this is such a different atmosphere. I've been alone in a studio with a couple of people hearing about everybody's dysfunction and making folly of it. And now I'm hearing people are just loving every minute of being here. And it changed me. And it made me realize how important that job is. Whatever entertainment you're bringing into, wherever you're bringing it, people need that entertainment to unwind from the stress and the anxiety of their everyday life.
Absolutely, absolutely. And can I tell you something about dysfunction? Again, this is my goal, is I want to help people if they think they have any kind of problems, right? Because they're not problems. They could be super, your superhero power. One of the reasons that my show was different than everybody else was because there was no way in the world that I could keep track of who put in what songs at what time. Like, people would bring up their song requests, and they'd say, okay, I want to sing this song after this guy, after this kind of time period. And I'm like, I can't do it. It didn't matter. So what I would do before every time I did a show is literally go out and collect all the song slips that people wanted to do, and I would look at them, and I'd go, okay, this crowd is totally a rock and roll crowd. So I'd play the first couple of songs just to get the show going, and then all of a sudden I would say, I need somebody to sing the song. And it might be like Bon Jovi, like Living on the Prayer. So you start out the song, dum, 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 dum. And all of a sudden, I've got people running up to the stage. And I'm like, get going. And I'd be screaming, like, get the song going. And everyone would be up on stage, on the stage. They're, like, screaming and yelling. And some people get pissed off, right? They go, like, when's my song coming up? And I'm like, dude, you're next. And I'd throw their song on. So what I ended up doing was DJing karaoke because I couldn't keep order of the song. So I was dysfunctional at it. But it worked for me.
That's fantastic. That's awesome. It's a lot to keep track of, right? And at the time when you used CDs, it was a lot of stuff to queue up. Now I think everything being automated with computers makes it a lot easier. But it was a hard gig then. You had to really be on it. And a lot of times the host engineered everything, and then they got up and they also hosted and they sang, and it was a lot.
It was a total. It was a lot, you know. And then people would you know, they've got your certain songs. I don't know if you know karaoke culture, but when you go to a new karaoke bar, you kind of have to sit and wait and see who's there and who's singing what, and you have to kind of wait your turn because every bar has a different feel to it. Like, you go into this one bar, and My Way is sung by Bruce. That is his song. Nobody else gets to sing that song no matter what. In this other bar, someone else sings My Way, but not Bruce, okay? And you have to be cognizant of that as a host when you go from place to place because you've got people that are following you. And when they get there, you already have the song queued up because you know that's their song.
Yeah, that's a lot of ego, though, to deal with.
It is. It's a lot. And, you know, it's the thing about it is everyone in their bar knows everybody else, right? It's that whole everybody knows your name kind of thing, right? But when you you go to a different bar, you don't know what's going on. So you kind of have to, like, learn their culture if you're going to be there and be cool. And especially if you're, like, the, you know, like you're the rock star singer and you know you're going to blow people away with your song, you kind of just have to bide your time, wait till the host calls you, and then it's you.
Yeah, I knew somebody once who used to, their little game was, the host would say, have you ever been here? Have you ever done this before? Ever been here before? And then they would say no. And so the truth was they'd never been to that place before, but they were a professional singer. And then they would get up and rock the shit out of something, and people would get mad. The host would get mad because it's almost like a pool shark, right? Oh, I don't really know how to play. I'll bet you $100.
Well, you know, the opposite of that also happens, right? Because you'll have people that go like, oh, my God, my friend sings like Whitney Houston. That right there is like the clue that they can't sing at all.
Oh, no, yeah.
Yeah, and it just means, you know, put them up, Graham Barrett, and have everyone clap for them. It doesn't matter. And, you know, it turns out to be okay. Because I think karaoke, for the most part, if you can get into a karaoke bar where the host actually knows the crowd and knows how to make the night go, it's a super fun experience, whether you sing or not, whether you get up in a group or not, whether all you do all night is you sing your one song and that thing goes, tequila, you know, that's it. It's just fun, you know, and I have people get together, it gets people out of their shell. It's an amazing time, and I never would have thought it before I started, like, doing it and then hosting it.
Yeah, that's so wonderful. Have you always leaned towards the arts? Have you always been an artistic person, a creative person?
Yeah. I was the black sheep of the family, so instead of doing anything business-wise, I decided to major in music, you know, and I played clarinet, sax, flute, you know, did a double major for a while, and then got out of it, because music for me got to be too political. It didn't matter how good you were, if you weren't, like, you know, in college, if you weren't the seniors or the graduate students, you weren't sitting first chair, you're going to sit back and play third chair, you know, that kind of stuff. So I just got out of it so it would be fun. So I taught myself to play piano and got into the rock band.
That's awesome. Do you still play? Do you still play music? Are you still in bands?
I probably could, but I haven't done it in years. You know, my goal is to get back into it one day. One day.
You miss it, right? I miss it.
I do. I do miss it. And it would just be so cool to get out and play again and maybe travel a little bit on the weekends. Depends on if we have roadies or not, because, you know, lifting up equipment just isn't my gig anymore.
Uh-oh. No, it's just I see how much equipment. My first club that I ever booked, we bought the PA system. We bought the lights. My boyfriend hooked all the lights up. He ran sound every night. I booked the band. I look back now and I think, man, that was a lot of work. Every time something broke, we had to fix it. Every time somebody broke a speaker out, or one time I had the band play and it was the singer punched out all the lights and threw up on the stage. So I had to replace all those expensive light bulbs. I had to clean the stage up. I mean, it was a lot. And so the longer I book music, and I book music for 25 years full time, the less I brought in and did myself. Because it just became too much. Like, you know, when you're 23 and you've never done it, you're like, I'm going to be great at this. But after a while, it just becomes a lot. So, yeah, if I was to book music again, it would have to be someplace that already had everything set up and ready to go, and all I had to do was bring talent in. But I miss it. I think about it. I think about doing it. Remember, I own the URL, Music Raises the Vibration, and also Laughter Raises the Vibration, and Theater Raises the Vibration. Pre-COVID, I had this idea that I was going to do charity plays, comedy nights, and music nights, all based around the idea of raising the vibration. So, someday.
Why wouldn't you still do that? That is like, first of all, you've got the whole raising the vibration thing going on, so why not just go with it
and
like, do it?
And I will, once things open up more and COVID's a little in the past and people are more comfortable doing things, I will absolutely do that. And
absolutely.
When I was booking my radio show, four times a year I used to broadcast live from the Hollywood Improv and pack out the club. It was so much fun. And I changed the name of that show to Laughter Raises the Vibration after a while so I could tie it into the nonprofit. So eventually everything will get tied into the nonprofit, but it's a process, right? But, yeah, I mean, I miss that feeling of booking live music. I miss how great it was and how much people loved it and booking comedy. I love the excitement and energy of being out there. You know, it was a lot of fun.
I think it is. I think, you know, as far as booking, because I used to book a place in Dallas just doing the with nothing huge, but I got to book all the bands and have them come into this place called Buzz Brews, which was actually really cool. And I met so many people. And, again, it was almost like the karaoke, but, I mean, it was live band. I wasn't performing. But I wanted to bring in people who wanted to perform and just didn't have a way to do it, but they could be good or they were good, and I wanted to encourage them to keep going. Because sometimes you'll hear, like, some of the guys come in and they'll be like, oh, I've got this song, I wrote it yesterday, and I kind of want to perform it for somebody. And they're afraid to do it, but they want to do it. They just need somebody to say, you know what, let's just hear it, okay? Let's do it at open mic tonight, and if you're good, we'll book you some other time. And you get them up there playing their song and, again, get people to listen and applaud for them and just give them feedback. And I think that is, like, to me, one of the best things that I could do for somebody. And that's not just BSing them, because you don't want to go, great, you're the best, but they sound, like, you know, horrible. But there's something you can tell people.
Yeah, everybody I booked, I'd find a place for. Even if they did the 7 o'clock slot or they did the 12 o'clock midnight slot, I never told anybody, no, I'm not going to book you, unless there was some kind of a behavioral problem or the guy who threw up on the stage, I didn't have him back. But for the most part, if you came to me for a gig, I would find you one. I wouldn't guarantee you anybody's going to be there but the bartender and the sound guy, but I'll let you play.
Yeah,
because everybody needs that opportunity, right?
They do. And, you know, it's interesting because I played L.A., I played Chicago, I played Dallas, and each of those towns has a different booking vibe, right? Like, when I was in L.A., and it's been, 5 years now since I was there and helping my friend book gigs, L.A. was all about, we'll book you if you can bring a crowd. By the way, you have to pay us up front to book you, and you got to pay the bar, and you got to do all this stuff, right? Basically paying for your own entertainment. In Chicago, it was completely different, right? Like, we were expecting to have to actually, you know, do the whole L.A. thing. But no, it's like, oh, dude, I need a band tonight. I'll pay you, like, 50, okay, $100. And it's, like, unheard of in L.A.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, the thing about L.A. was, though, and I did both kind of shows. Because a lot of times people would say to me, well, we really want to play the Whiskey or we want to play the Roxy. It's like, okay, well, here's the thing. If I'm dishing out, you know, $3,000 out of my pocket to rent this club, you're going to guarantee you're going to bring people.
Right.
Because sometimes people sometimes people book a show and they blow it off and they don't even promote it. And so that's fine if I'm just sitting there at a club that I don't have to pay for. But if I have to pay a lot of money for a club, you got to help. And I think it's important. And you know, bands would say, well, we don't have money for flyers and we don't have money for this. And I'm like, yeah, but you guys have money for beer.
Right.
So secretly you do have money for all of that. You just don't want to have money for it. But it's really important that I kind of felt like booking bands was also like I was a maternal figure, and it was kind of a learning experience. And it wasn't just about booking them. It was also about teaching them how to kind of work their own business.
Thank you.
That you can't bring nothing and do nothing and expect that all these people are going to come because you're so wonderful. They don't even know who you are.
Correct.
So I felt it was sort of my spiritual duty to help them to realize how to build their own business as well. I started out, I was an actor, and then when I was in college, I did a video of a bunch of characters, kind of inspired by how much I loved Whoopi Goldberg's special. And I just would send a little snippet of each of these characters out with my resumes when I auditioned for things. And I wound up getting public access shows. And that people would come and they'd ask Sheena Metal to come and be on this. And the first show I ever did was called Dino and Rocco's Back Alley. And it was these two guys from Jersey who ate pizza the whole time. And their guest spot was literally a toilet. I sat on a toilet and made these guys laugh.
No way.
And from that, the guys who ran the cable company that, you know, managed the cable company said, hey, you know what? You should do your own show. And that's how I started. So when I had that show, I bicycled tapes all over. We aired all over the country, and I used to ask my cast members to dress up in our heavy metal costumes like our characters, and I would fill buckets full of bite-sized candy, and each one had a flyer stuck to it. We would walk up and down Sunset Boulevard. That was before they passed the city ordinance that you couldn't loiter on the streets, and those streets would be 6-7 feet thick with rockers every night. We would walk up and down the street and pass out candy and pass out flyers. And soon, like, all these people were watching my show because I got out there. And
that's what you have to teach the musicians.
Right. Anybody can make it with what they're doing. But you've got to get out there. And the getting out there is even more important than the talent, because this world is full of talented people that are doing nothing with their talent.
Oh, man, where were you when I was doing my Embrace Your Snake show? That is absolutely so, so true. It's like, and the thing about it is most artists, we'll pick on musicians for a minute since we're talking about them, think that, like you said, I can make it. All you have to do is just give me the right break. And what I say to people is, you don't even understand. If I gave you a break to play the Orange Bowl in Miami, you wouldn't know how to act, because playing in a bar and trying communicating with your drummer who's like 5 feet from you at the most is different than when you've got a drummer that's 20 feet away from you and you have no idea if they're even playing the same thing unless you've got your earphones in, right? Your in-ear monitors in. And there's a learning process and a curve that comes with being a musician or with anything. You know, even when I was doing photography, you know, I couldn't do the gigs that I did at the end when I first started. You know, you have to learn how to work the crowd. You have to learn how to be in the right place. You'd have to learn how to take the shots and know that that shot's coming right before this next shot comes, that sort of stuff. And you can't do it until you've built your business and until you've had enough experience. So.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. And it feels good to actually make something out of what you want to do.
Yeah.
But you have to do it.
Yeah, there's a learning curve, and I hate that it sounds so snide or cynical or whatever, but there are dues to pay, not because people are holding you back, but because you don't know. You know, you have to learn it first. You have to mess up first, and then you actually get to do what you think you want to do, and you still have to run the business at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, and folks that make it very easily or very young without having to pay those dues, then oftentimes somewhere in the middle of their career, they have a huge crisis and have to learn how to build themselves up all over again, like many of my friends who are former very famous child actors, right?
Mm-hmm.
It came so easy for them in the beginning because not for their parents' work, but for them, if they just showed up on the set and became famous. But then in their 20s or their 30s, they had to rebuild themselves.
Yep.
And, you know, there's no escaping life lessons. Everybody comes here with gifts, and everybody comes here with challenges. And you're never going to get over having to do the work, because that's kind of the whole thing about being alive on this planet, is doing the work.
I think so.
And people think
they're
going to get out of it, but there is no getting out of it.
Mm-mm. No. The only getting out of it might be death, and even then you probably, depending on what you believe, still have more to learn.
Right, exactly. And I always say, why would you want to? Why would you want to get out of it?
No,
you know, doing the work and making your life wonderful, that's the joy of being alive, right?
I agree. I've done so many things, right? And I wish I could do them all at the same time, you know? I've done the music, I've done the photography, I've done the teaching indoor cycling lessons. I've done that, and that was a fun thing. And, you know, right now I've got a whole company that's about, you know, doing marketing for psychics. And it's just an amazing process of all these things you get to learn and do and be. I don't know why people would not want to do something extraordinary or different or helpful with their lives.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. And why they wouldn't want to work. It's the work, it's the fun. I mean, the really sweating for something you love. I mean, that's what makes you really feel like you're alive, right?
Absolutely. I mean, people have come to me before, you know, and they're like, Michael, you get to do all these cool, fun things. And they say, well, I can't. And I'm like, you can. You just have to want to do it. You know, do you want to be a photographer or do you want to stay at your 9-to-5? And they go, but I have kids. And I'm like, do you want to be a photographer or do you want to stay at your 9-to-5? And there is a point where you have to go, like, this is what's important to me. This will actually help me grow. This will help my family. But right now I've got to stop worrying about making money, and I need to worry about living a life. So I'm absolutely the worst person to talk to if someone says, should I keep this job? Because my answer will always be, no. If you're not happy, no. It doesn't matter if you have bills to pay. There will always be bills to pay, right? So there's always the opportunity for you to take what you love, what you really want to do, and turn it into the next big thing or the next big thing for you. It doesn't have to be, I've got to go to work, I got to get up, I got to do the kids, I've got to go eat, come home, do it again. I just don't believe that.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. Yeah. I absolutely agree, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's interesting.
You know, it's like, go ahead.
No, finish your thought, because I'm going to take us in a different direction.
Oh, well, I'm all about different directions. Go right on with it.
I was going to say, what are you hoping to achieve with this new show?
The new show, the A Funny Way of Looking, is really about, you know, exploring life from an optimistic kind of perspective and then bringing hope to the world for people that feel disheartened. Like, seriously, that's it. And I've had all kinds of people on that show, like literally from people who've become world champion Mario players to we have had witches, we've had psychics, we've had herbalists, we've had photographers, we've had musicians, and it's all about people who have gotten out and they either are living their dream or helping other people live their dream, or they're bringing something phenomenal to the world, you know? Like you're bringing like a message to people. You actually get out and you say, you know what, this is my vision of how the world should be, and I'd love to share it with you, and you show your vision to people, right? I've got herbalists on who are like, you know what, you don't always have to take these Western medicines. There are other herbs, other things that you can do to make your health better. There is a better way to do water. I have a lady coming on who's going to be talking about different kinds of water that make you feel good. And you go, like, water? What's that? And it's like, well, it's natural. It makes you feel good. You don't have to pay a lot of money for it. that sort of stuff. So, and then we get back to the psychics, the witches. People want help. They want someone to listen to them. And the witches and psychics a lot of time are right there to help with those sorts of things. And even if you don't believe, if you're stone cold, you know, we'll just go with agnostic, and don't believe any of this stuff, just having someone listen to you can oftentimes get people up and moving toward where they should be.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, we have such a voice, people who have shows, right? To do anything that we want with them, to share anything that we want, to move the world in any way that we can. And and I think that's such an important thing. It's something to take so seriously now.
Yeah. I think, it's so funny because, like, everyone would go like, oh, my gosh, I want to be like XYZ star, right? I want to interview the stars. I want to interview the biggest people in the world. But you want to know what? There's only so many of those people, but there are amazing people right around us every day. There's a guy down the street from me. We have a local dump, literally, like where you go, you dump your trash. He started working there a few years ago, and what he does now is he has literally taken stuff from the dump, made the dump beautiful. He puts up decorations on all the holidays from the trash that people throw out, and people come up and go like, oh, can I have this now? And it's like, well, yeah, as soon as the holiday's over, you can have all this kind of stuff or whatever. But he's taken what people consider trash, and he's made a name for himself just as the guy who makes the dump a beautiful place and a place to go and you don't feel bad when you get there. That, to me, is no different than somebody who's got, you know, a million followers on whatever TV show or on Facebook or whatever that's talking to those people. And this guy might actually be more impactful, right? Because his community goes like, I love that guy.
I agree. And isn't it wonderful that we have that opportunity? And isn't it great that because of COVID, which was such a terrible thing and a tragic thing, right, that we now understand that we can do anything virtually if we want to, and it's not a lesser than thing. It's not cooler to be in a studio than it is to be at home. It's totally okay to get your voice out there any way that you want. I think a lot of the stereotype around, because I remember when people used to say to me, like, oh, what channel are you on? And I'd say, well, it's on the internet. They'd go, or, you know, what, do you have a studio? And, you know, for years I worked for a station that went down because of COVID that had a studio. And still it was like, you know, this whole idea. Now I'm glad I'm not in a studio. I'm glad I can work from where I am. And when I started my new Sheena Metal Experience show on KGRA in January, where I took that show and brought it to KGRA and made it to video format, it was the first time I ever did something that I was doing from home or online, so to speak, that I didn't feel like I had to apologize for beforehand. So I thank the COVID pandemic, because bad things always come out of good things, right, for changing
Absolutely.
The way that we think about that.
Yeah, I would say if you want to change the world, stop looking at the negative. I stopped listening to the news. You know, I mean, you have to catch it sometimes, right, because you're online. But think about what you want to do. And for me, during COVID, that's when I started one of my other programs. And this, a funny way of looking, grew out of that other program into what it is now. So it has been, for many people, COVID has been an awakening, right? Because we didn't know we could work from home. We didn't know that we could, like, raise the family and play with the kids part of the day and then work another part of the day and then not have to go to an office. And then, of course, you know, your boss is like, don't have to pay for travel anymore. We're saving some money.
Well, and I don't think the world's ever going to go back the way it was. I think it's always going to be a hybrid thing now. I think the world has just changed now. And it was already sort of creeping in that direction, and now it's just sort of hell-bent for leather chasing in that direction. But
it is
definitely in that direction. And I think that's a beautiful thing. I think it's wonderful. I think it's given a lot of people a chance to have a voice that wouldn't have had a chance to have a voice before. And I think it's thrilling. And I think it's also given people who don't have a whole lot of money to put into a show, the availability, the opportunity to feel like they have a voice. And I think that's really wonderful. So I'm kind of just all about it. And I love doing your show. I love the questions you ask me. You're so smart and so sharp. And you're such a beautiful voice. You have such a beautiful soul.
Thank you.
And I know you asked me this question about blending Christianity and magic. So I'm going to ask you now, what was it like for you when you started working with witches? Was it weird? I mean, how did you grow up? Was that an okay thing? And how did the whole I work for witches come into your life?
You know what? It's for me, working with the I started with psychics. And it's, again, it's from L.A. I got to maybe move back to L.A. It started in L.A. I had built an app that was basically it was a business card that you used on your phone, and you send your business card to anyone else just by having them basically go to a website. And one of the clients that I had sent me over to a psychic in Los Angeles, and she liked what I did, so I built one for her. And then I actually worked on her online, bigger website. And at the same time, I was doing some Facebook marketing. So it turned out that she wanted to do Google advertising. And she knew a lady in New York who did Google. And I'm like, well, I don't do Google. I don't think it's doing well right now for what you want to do. So go ahead and talk with her. And I decided, you know what, let me call up the lady in New York. And her name was Cindy. And I talked to Cindy, and I said, hey, you know, I see you're working with my client over on Google, and she says, yeah, but a lot of my clients want to work with Facebook, and I don't do Facebook. And I'm like, serendipitous. Okay, so she said, here, I've got a client for you. Why don't you try doing something on Facebook, and let's see what happens. So I took it. It took about a week for me to get things set up, and then I called her up, and I said, hey, I'm getting about, 30 leads a day for the psychic. And at that point, she dropped her mouth and was like, dropped her jaw and said, you're doing what? I said, yeah, I'm getting like 30 leads a day. And she's like, okay, here, try another one. So I got another one and another 30 leads a day per psychic. And they're really spending like $20 a day. So if you figure $20 a day, 30 leads, if you're any good at selling, you're going to sell some people some of your services, and it's paying for itself. So over the next couple of years, I started working with multiple psychics, right? And at this point, it wasn't that I was, saying to myself, okay, I believe what the psychics can do. I know what they can do. It wasn't like that. It was just straight-up business, right? Now, what really started to make a lot more sense wasn't just the psychics, but it was when I started working with the witches, because the witches are super cool, right?
Yeah.
They've got their whole deal going on. They've got a lot of back history. Not that the psychics don't, but somehow I just kind of gelled with what the witches were saying, right? And
right.
Just learning more about, okay, so now we've got tarot involved. We've got clairaudience involved. We've got clairvoyance. We've got all these other things that maybe the psychics weren't doing. And then we have people who are saying, well, this might happen to you. And I'm like, yeah, might not. And then some things started happening. So it started being more than just coincidence, right? So it was more of, maybe I can just, like, listen a little bit, learn a little bit, and see what is going on with all the extra-normal, paranormal things that are happening around us in the world. Because it's not that everything is happening by accident. Lots and lots of things are happening. You just have to be aware that they're out there and happening. So that's kind of how I got into it, right?
I love that. I love that. And were you raised that that was all okay?
I wasn't discouraged from it. Before both of my parents passed away, I was telling them, yeah, I'm working with psychics. And I'm pretty sure they didn't go to church to say, yeah, our kid's working with psychics. But but they didn't discourage it. They were like, okay, see what happens. You're making money at it. You're having fun with it. Go with it. So I was not discouraged away from the psychics. And it's interesting because I have to look at, and the other thing that happened is it wasn't just psychics, but it's multiple religions, right? Like I've had people on A Funny Way of Looking who practice multiple religions. And the biggest thing that I found is that every religion has overlap with other ones, right? And you look at what everyone wants, which is basically peace, love, and harmony, and how do you get there? And, you know, my religion says get there this way, yours says get there that way. They overlap more than people think. And if you can stop and listen to other people, you'll see that, you know, not everybody's an outsider. They're pretty much the same path.
I completely agree. That's the thing that I think is so wonderful about being an interfaith minister, is that everybody's included in interfaith. And I can't imagine any other way. I don't think I would want anything where everybody wasn't included.
Yeah. There's no reason to cut somebody out. The worst thing that could happen is you listen and you disagree. Okay?
Yeah.
I guess some things could happen because you might have someone that's super radical, and the super radical are, it's our way or the highway, you know, and if you don't go our way, there's punishment that happens. So there is that.
Right.
But as far as the overall beliefs, a lot of people believe the exact same thing, and they just worship it differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so.
I totally agree. I absolutely agree with you. Yeah, and I think that's so beautiful. What are you hoping to do with the show? I mean, what is your goal? I don't mean like that in a weird business plan way, but I mean, how many people would, how would you like, who would you like to reach with it? What are you hoping people will do because they know it's out there? Like, how do you want it to make a difference in the world?
I want to, here's what would happen. Every day somebody comes on the show, or every time we do a show, somebody comes on and they have a different way of looking at X, Y, or Z. For example, let's do simple. Somebody comes on and they talk about herbs and how herbs relax you, or oils, essential oils relax you, right? And if somebody out there is super stressed and they go like, oh my gosh, I heard this program on Facebook or on YouTube, and it talked about how I can use essential oils just to relax. So I'm going to go try making a lavender pillow, put it on my forehead at night, and I'm going to sleep better. And if that helps them sleep a little bit better and relieves their stress, the show has done its job. You know what I mean? Every day
Beautiful.
I could reach out to somebody new and help them either fulfill a goal, feel better about themselves, help somebody else, that's what I want to do. The show's not about me at all. I'm simply a, let's use the word vessel, you know, to get the word out to other people.
Yeah.
And that's what I want.
Yeah, I love that. That's so wonderful. And it really is kind of your higher human purpose, right? I think in life we have a lot of talents, we have a lot of gifts, we have a lot of things that we just naturally are good at, and we use those things to make our place in the world. And then somewhere along the line we discover what is our higher human purpose. Then we realize all along that's what we always should have been doing, but you have to do the other things to build yourself up to be ready for that spiritual reveal, right?
Absolutely. I mean, my spiritual reveals have come through a lot of getting my butt kicked, starting up multiple businesses and having them taken away or fail, just doing the things that it takes to understand how you help other people. Because I've always said my goal in life is to help other people reach their potential. And I suppose to help people do that, I have to reach whatever my potential is to be able to deliver that message. And that's what I'm working on me personally. I think the show is actually very selfish of me, you know, because like I told you,
it's very connected. I think it's how you think as an evolved and connected person. As you are raising up your vibration, you're helping others to do the same. And that's what we're all supposed to be doing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I love doing. I think the show is my vehicle. It really is. I'm so happy that I fell into it or found it or however we want to look at it. But the show is an amazing gift for me. It's amazing also in that the people that I'm working with are absolutely phenomenal, and I can't wait to make this bigger and lift them up and be able to provide them and their families with more of the things that they want, whether it's money or travel or being able to support their kids or go to school or whatever. I want to be able to help people do that.
Yeah, I think that's so beautiful. That's so wonderful. What can you keep the shows short? What is the decision behind that? Because you can see my shows are lengthy.
Oh, well, the reason I keep the show short right now is because
so
I started it as a lunchtime show.
Okay.
And one of my personal goals is I wanted to get on and be able to do a TED Talk. And TED Talks are only 18 minutes, right?
So. Oh, wow. Okay.
They did these studies, and they found out that, like, 18 minutes, you should be able to get the salient points across to your audience in that amount of time with your graphics, with your talking, with your body language, everything. And I'm like, you know what? I want to do a TED Talk-type show at lunchtime so people have time to go, like, I want to listen to Michael today. Who's got on? And that's why I did 18 minutes, you know. And it works out. And also people, if you see, like, a two-hour show, people are going to go, like, I ain't got time for that. So those are the reasons right there. Not to mention I also want to do a test in Spanish.
I'm old school radio, so mine's still an hour because I'm old school radio. But I love doing yours, and I love that it was short. I thought it was going to be not fulfilling, and it was fantastic.
Oh, thank you. I told you've been doing this, like, way longer than I have, and there's lots that you can teach me and I can learn from you. So don't think I don't I have your phone number, like, on speed dial. Beating, it's right there.
Nice. I love that story. That's awesome.
Yep. I'll be calling you up for advice.
My friend. Where can people find you online? And will you come back and we'll do this again? I would love it.
Okay. Yeah, they can find us online at a funny way of looking, afunnywayoflooking.com. That's the best way and easiest way to find us. The show airs on Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays on Facebook, and pretty soon it will be on probably Twitch and YouTube for sure. And we'll probably do some live stuff on TikTok. But for right now, just go to the website. You'll see the shows. You'll see all the past shows, and hit us up there.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here. My wonderful new friend, Michael Jackson, I hope you had as much fun as I did, my friend.
I had a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
You bet. Bye-bye. If you missed any of those links, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. That's how you find out about me and everything I'm doing, SheenaMetalSpiritual.com. And you can find me everywhere on social media at SheenaMetal. Until I see you next time, my friends, every Tuesday at 5 o'clock Pacific time, seek peace, live in love, lead with kindness, embrace unity, always raise your vibration, and know that you are love and you are loved. I'll see you next time. I love you all so much. I'll see you next Tuesday. Please get in touch with me. I would love it. I'm Sheena Metal, and this is Raising the Vibration right here on Live Paranormal, iHeartRadio, and all of our affiliates. We'll see you next time.